Thank you, Johannes. And thank Monochrome for putting this all together. I know you're probably all very tired. It looks like it's been a long weekend. So I'll try and keep this lively and quick. Basically, the story here is about porn and visual effects and what I consider to be the inevitable future of visual effects in pornography. Let me just let something run here for a moment for you. This was made a few years ago. You probably recognize this, some of you, as one of the features that was released as part of the Animatrix in between the first and second and third Matrix films. The team that put this together, it's entirely CG, entirely computer graphics, 100% pixels. And it was put together by some of the same artists that worked on Final Fantasy, if you saw that film. At the time, it was one of the more extremely photorealistic portrayals of human characters, facial textures, and animation that was being done. It's actually a shame that you can't see this really on a better quality screen than just a washed out projector right now. On some of the close-ups, the skin texture, the sweat, the hair, the skin texture is impressive. They start sweating and breathing heavy. And what we think at first is just some sort of sword fight training session starts to get a little interesting. That little look there. It's, there we are. An impressive human touch. I open with this because whatever your feelings are about computer graphics and special effects and, well, what we'll talk about is visual effects, I'll differentiate in a moment, whatever your thoughts about that are, whatever your previous experience with that is, that was a little hot. I mean, you might think, oh, I'm not gonna be aroused by a synthetic image, but that actually kind of got hot. My general point, I initially had entitled this presentation The Untapped Potential of Visual Effects in the World of Pornography. And I've since retitled it as The Inevitable Future of Visual Effects in Pornography, because I realized in doing this, well, what Andy Grove said, which is a fundamental rule in technology says that whatever can be done will be done. Historically, we've shown no hesitation, well, maybe a little hesitation, but certainly over a long enough time, no reluctance to use technology for everything it can potentially be used for, including and often especially sex. So here's the behind the green screen door, the inevitable future of digital effects and pornography. It's what I'd like to talk about. Thank you. First, I'd like to just, as an aside, say that in putting this together, I've taught for about 4 years at the Academy of Art just down the street, and in all that time, I've never had as much trouble as I have this week in digitizing still frames, capturing video clips and shit from DVD. And this is perfectly a fair use scenario, and yet I was thwarted every step of the way because of DRM and a bunch of other really stupid stuff. So if that's ever happened to you, I strongly encourage you to join and volunteer and donate for the EFF. Visual effects are everywhere. Anyone who's a consumer of visual culture has surely seen that they're pervasive in your visual environment now. They're on in film, commercials, television shows, and if you've noticed, the overall quality of visual effects has increased along with their ubiquity. And yet, they don't seem to be used very frequently in pornography. There's been some use of them, but it really isn't that widespread. We'll talk about some of the more, the few examples of visual effects in pornography later on. When I talk about visual effects, a lot of you, I know Johannes used the term special effects. We differentiate now special effects and visual effects. Visual effects is typically everything that's done in post-production. So anything that's done often digital, whereas special effects are what's done on set. So a stuntman flying through a window or off a car or a blood squib exploding. And visual effects, digital visual effects, or just VFX, is what's done in post-production. Specifically, I want to focus on photorealism. There's a big difference between this and this. Maybe you can't tell. I'm a professional, so there's some things that stand out for me there. But and yet someone made it, and I'm sure someone paid for it. Probably more than one person paid for this, and that's interesting. This is, of course, render prawn. Or poser porn. Most of it is made with a program called Poser. It's been out for a number of years now. And it's a very inexpensive program that allows relatively inexperienced artists to pose and render human or other semi-human forms. It's all over the internet, and some attributes of render porn are that it's really cheap, it's typically non-photorealistic. Typically, there's still images, although it's beginning to move into animated. Just over the last couple of years, there's been an explosion of animated render porn. And it's often fetish-based. BDSM, incest, xenophilia, hentai, bestiality, many things that would be impossible or, for other reasons, hard to find actors who would be willing to portray it on screen. These markets are addressed now by render porn. Also, there's a just gross, flagrant disregard for any sort of intellectual property. In fact, a lot of times you'll see that this porn is filling a niche of desire for people who want to see otherwise copyrighted figures like Disney characters or The Simpsons or other movie characters like E.T. be used in sexual situations. So here's some examples of that. There's basic quality of render porn, some Nazi porn. Oh, how strongly united we have become. We should strengthen our contacts and positions even more. We should take counsel with you frequent. And some alien sort of hentai sci-fi porn. The quality is getting better. Here's something I just found today on a site that is advertising an interactive game version of this. And you may not be able to tell from this, but it is actually significantly better in terms of quality than what was shown in those still frames. It can be realistic or... Again, though, it shows the amount of... I mean, there's a lot of development here. If only it were that easy. One point, though, that I do want... One point that you should bear in mind through everything else we see, this is an indication of both what people desire to see on some level and what people are paying to see. And the fact that it isn't photorealistic right now, that it's so stylized and abstracted from what we opened the talk with, means nothing. It's going to be that level of quality in a hentai, of course, and robot porn. Special features, I love. Yes, it has a special feature. So this right now is well on the safe side of the uncanny valley. What we've seen in the past couple of years, and you're probably familiar with that term, I really won't go into it now because it's sort of played out, but what I want to talk about is straddling the uncanny valley. And basically that was just an opportunity to use the term straddling in my talk. And what we're seeing is the quality of render porn start to improve. This is a site called Amazon Soul. By, again, a splinter group of some of the people that made Final Fantasy and the Animatrix thing. And it's actually a 2D comic book that you buy online that occasionally every third or fourth panel has some little animation that you can, if you subscribe to, you can see it play out. And it's basically some sort of future science fiction world where everyone is a woman. It's basically a Heavy Metal magazine in 3D with some animation. So there's the main character, Mika, Nelly, S, and the only man in this world named Dick. So that's the direction that render porn is taking. You can see from that, it's even though it's a still image, the quality has definitely improved. It's a lot more photorealistic. I want to step away from the characters in the effects for a minute and talk about some of the other types of technologies. We'll come back to CG actors later, but I'd like to talk about some of the other technologies that you may or may not be familiar with in visual effects. Just kind of want to run through them, and as we talk about them, I'll point out some of the potential ways that those technologies can and have been used in pornography. And I'm sure you'll come up with a few more on your own. Virtual sets is a big one. You've seen this in, most recently, probably 300, Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. This is where you basically film some or all of your movie against a blue screen or a green screen, and then the environment around the actors is recreated or created from scratch, really, either partially or entirely in the computer. And there are some really significant budgetary savings involved in doing this. As it turns out, on a Hollywood production, it's much cheaper to rent a warehouse in Van Nuys, paint it blue, and shoot in that for 4 months than it is to do even 3 or 4 weeks of location shooting with sets and union members and actors and props and sets that you may have to build even. This one is another film that was completely blue screen. Sin City, a complete green screen production shot in Texas. Let's see, it's cheaper than location shoots, vastly cheaper than location shoots. It's cheaper than building real sets, and the action can take place anywhere. These are obviously very palpable benefits both for mainstream cinema as well as for any porn films. Next would be invisible effects. Let's show some examples of these. Here's some paint out. It's often referred to as digital paint or digital paint and rotoscope. It's frame by frame retouching to remove things like cables in a wire fighting movie like The Matrix or just about any other movie right now that has stunt or fighting sequences. Most of the actors and actresses are suspended by wires. Those wires have to be removed, often by artists working frame by frame. Removal of dirt, restoration of films. Dirt, scratches, dust can be painted out frame by frame. Logos. Logos can be taken off of things. Cigarettes can be removed. There was a shot that I worked on, that I did not work on, but one of my coworkers at Industrial Light and Magic worked on the movie The Perfect Storm, just to give you some idea of the granularity. Scratches. That prop was broken, and you can't really see it, but it has cracks on it, so the artist painted out the cracks. Tattoo removals. The artist, the performer Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg, has a tattoo on his chest that says Marky Mark. And on the movie The Perfect Storm, though they tried to cover it up with makeup, after repeated takes, that the makeup started to wear through, and you could see his Marky Mark tattoo. So we had to go in on several shots and paint out the tattoo. The previous example I was about to mention was an artist coworker of ours was requested by the director to paint out the tears on a young boy's face who was saying goodbye to his fisherman father on the doomed fishing voyage in the movie The Perfect Storm. And he thought that the tears were just too excessive for the scene at that point in the movie. So she spent about a week painting out the tears and then showed it to the director, who thought the result was a little too unnatural to see that there was no tears at all. So sitting together at her computer, they worked out exactly which tears to keep and which tears to excise. The precision and granularity of these sorts of things, and in fact the increasing ubiquity of them, may not be something that you're aware of unless you work in this business. It really is incredibly pervasive. A similar related technique is that George Lucas is a big fan of this. If he didn't get the performance he wanted from both actors in a scene, he would often splice a take 12, say he liked one actor, but in take 25 he liked the other actor. And then he would ask us to split the two different takes and digitally paste them together and slip the character's position and timing and often their eye lines to relate to one another. So it's this incredibly surgical and invisible type of work that can go on, if, of course, you have the time and the budget for it. So let's see. This is good for removing unwanted wires, cabling, effects, and other rigs, camera rigs, boom microphones, lighting stands, stray crew members that walk through your scene, film damage, scratches, dust, and dirt, and even fixing continuity errors. I spent an afternoon painting out a silver retirement watch off of the wrist of Jack Nicholson because he was supposed to have taken it off in a prior shot, and it was an unwanted continuity error. They do not reshoot these things. It's so much cheaper to have someone spend a day painting it out in the computer than to call Jack Nicholson and get him back for, you know, a half an hour of shooting. This leads us into digital cosmetic enhancement, which is an area that's kind of blowing up right now, although it's not widely talked about outside of the industry, perhaps for obvious reasons. There are rumors, though I believe that these rumors have been started by some of the companies who do digital cosmetic work, that some major Hollywood actors and actresses are requiring it be part of their contract, that they have some say over cosmetic improvement of what they look like in a film. An example, perhaps the most obvious one, is from the recent X-Men 3 film. In the opening scenes, you see Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen's characters in a flashback some 25 years earlier. This was done completely without any makeup, any practical on-set effects. No tracking markers, nothing. They went and they shot the scene looking as they do today. And then in the computer, over the course of a couple months, all of the shots in that sequence were digitally de-aged. Now, Patrick Stewart's a fairly good-looking old man, so not a lot of changes for him. Ian McKellen needed a little bit more work, so making his nose smaller, narrowing the nose. Turns out, in their research, they realized that the nose and the ears, because their cartilage, actually continue to swell and enlarge as you grow older. So they actually had to cut the ears and nose off and digitally repaste them smaller. You notice they cut a new jawline and covered up some of his jowls, digitally diminished a lot of his wrinkles. This may seem really, really ambitious stuff. We did this as homework in one of my classes at the Academy last semester. We took Anthony Hopkins and age regressed him anywhere from 10 to 25 years, depending on how good the students were. So, what else? HD, a lot of productions, how is this relevant? A lot of productions now are moving to shoot on HD, high definition video. HD, as you probably heard, reveals a lot of imperfections in the skin. They're having a big problem with this on HD evening news broadcasts, because all of a sudden there's this, all those harsh lights, you see this moonscape of craters and pockmarks on these people's faces, and the only alternative has been to just cake them with sort of Elizabethan amounts of makeup. And there's actually a very big growth industry in hardware devices to smooth skin areas on talking heads, you know, video signals for talking heads for news feeds, to diminish blemishes in a realistic but not noticeable way. That's probably going to be an issue in porn as we move to HD. I mean, granted, the aesthetic is somewhat different, and the consumer demands things are a little bit different than what you expect from your nightly news, but there's a broad market for porn, and some porn stars are not the most perfectly skinned people. So blemish removal, rashes, scars, augmentation scars. In some porn, that's fine. In others, you may want to paint it out. And condom removals. This is actually a personal favorite of mine in brainstorming this, realizing that there's a statistical, fairly strong statistical bias in sales of pornography, that safe porn doesn't usually sell nearly as well as porn without protection, especially in the gay porn market. And yet increasingly more and more porn actors and actresses refuse to work without protection. There's a lot of things that have happened in the porn industry over the last 20, 15 years in terms of testing and record keeping, but every few years there's still a bit of a flap when it turns out someone actually faked it or didn't get tested like they said they should, and oh my god, now 200 people have to go and immediately get themselves tested because they all worked with so-and-so. You could quite legitimately shoot all your porn films with full use of condoms, and it's a relatively trivial issue to go in and frame by frame paint it out. I'm not sure I would be the person to volunteer for that job, but yeah, good entry-level work. Paint out, here you go, and paint it out, hey, it's gone. Paint it out, hey, it's gone. All right, so there's that, but it's a sort of a health issue there. Now, back to CG actors. CG actors probably know about Gollum, is a very famous one. There was some talk, actually I remember the year that the second and third Lord of the Rings movies came out, people were actually seriously thinking that Andy Serkis, the actor who portrayed Gollum, might actually get an Academy Award for his performance. Some people were really upset that he didn't because it was such a compelling, dramatic performance, regardless of the fact that it was given by proxy through this digital counterpart. It was a very lifelike and dramatic role. More recently, in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, you have Davy Jones.
Then I saw her face. Now I...
The wrong Davy Jones. This Davy Jones. I didn't get a longer clip from the movie, but that's what he looks like. You've all seen the movie because it grossed $1 billion. International gross for Pirates of the Caribbean was over $1 billion. And if you saw this film, you may have wondered how they did this character. He's completely digital. When they filmed him, they actually had motion tracking, and they did makeup around his eyes and mouth, and they ended up not using any of that. I've worked in this business for 18 years. When I left, I went and saw this film with a number of people from ILM, including some people who worked on the lighting and rendering of this character. When I walked out of the theater, I immediately asked them, it wasn't completely CG. There was some amount of that. His costume, his eyes, some part of it was not digital. And the response was, no, he's 100% pixels. And if you didn't know that, you should watch that film again and just look at the sensitivity, especially in the third movie. Some of the dramatic performances you get out of him crying about his lost love are just amazing. Or is that in the second film? Yeah, both. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. A lot of that's down to the actor, Bill Nighy, who portrayed him, but a great deal of that's down to the animators and rendering technicians and lighting and texture people and simulation artists that worked to make this all happen. A part of making that happen was motion capture. It's a technology that you're probably also somewhat familiar with now, by which actors or performers are fitted with some sort of array of tracking markers. That data is then captured by a number of sensors or cameras, brought into the computer, and applied to 3D models. It can often be a great shortcut to decrease the amount of time it takes to animate many, many performances. It's found a real strong use in the video game industry, where the precision of the performances is not so much as important as the sheer quantity. You picture a football game or a soccer game where they have to have hundreds and hundreds of possible different behaviors and animations. It's really a lot easier to get a room full of soccer players and put them in these suits than it is to have a dozen animators animate for 5 years. Motion capture, or mocap, has historically been somewhat invasive, and you have to wear a whole lot of gear to do it, and it's increasingly gotten less so. In fact, this is still from Pirates of the Caribbean. Motion capture, you used to have to do it in rooms, in warehouses, with specific grids of cameras or sensors. ILM devised a system by which this actor, the Bill Nighy, who portrayed Davy Jones, was able to do it on set, using just two cameras and wearing a minimum of tracking equipment. Nothing really very invasive, leaving him free to focus on his performance. So again, there's a technology that was once, didn't work so great, was kind of a joke, cost a lot of money, enforced a lot of limitations on how you're supposed to use it, that's progressively gotten a lot cheaper and a lot more nimble and more suiting the way that filmmakers and artists want to work. That's the general trend of everything, obviously. It's just getting cheaper and better really fast. They had thought initially, if you're wondering about the makeup, they had thought that they were going to preserve his mouth and eyes from the actual actor, because really that's where so much of the performance lives. And in the end, it was just easier and every bit as compelling to go with a completely digital render, just using this for reference for the animators to later track and keyframe on top of. Let's see, where are we? So, this is a really rich area in terms of photorealistic CG actors. Digital doubles, they use these now in films. You don't see it a lot, but you don't see it, but it's the case of whenever an actor has to do something that's a stunt, but it has to look like them. Consider Orlando Bloom in Lord of the Rings running up that Mumakil and swinging around it and shooting arrows and that whole sequence. He starts off in it as the real actor and very quickly switches to his digital double, full frame in the middle of the shot, and then stays digital all the way right up until the end when he slides off the tail. And again, full frame, as you're watching it, transitions back to live-action Orlando Bloom. So he went and did a series of performances, a series of moves that would be impossible for a stunt person to do, would be impossible for a camera to film, but we were able to show it in a movie because we could seamlessly transition from live action to a digital character and back without anyone really noticing or certainly not breaking the illusion of being in the film. It cost a lot of money to do that and took a lot of time, but it's possible. You can also, if you've built that stunt double, if you've scanned in the images or modeled the data, modeled the 3D character, textured it and created it, once you've spent that money, you can then have that character do an endless number of things. You still have to pay an animator or possibly just a motion capture crew, but that may be a lot less expensive than hiring actors. So once you've made the investment in developing your good hero, you know, Idoru, your CG porn star, you can then endlessly generate new content from it without having to pay an actor or pay a human again and again and again. It can look like anything or anyone. And this should set your imaginations kind of going. It could be anything. You know, apart from Davy Jones with the tentacles on the chin, it could be any type of creature. And again, it could be photorealistic. It could be absolutely convincing to the viewer. Anything you want to depict in a story could be realized with this technology. One possibility that this brings up for me, and I think culturally there are a lot of barriers to it happening anytime soon, but I think where there's a desire, and I think there is a desire, and the render porn shows us that, that eventually the technology and artists will move to deliver on that. And that is the issue of having professional acting in porn films by casting professional actors, but those professional actors may not want to appear in naked, hardcore pornography. There's still a lot of cultural and social stigmas attached to that. However, if over time it became more culturally accepted and more financially beneficial, and certainly it will be, that maybe they would consent to acting in these movies and then having the porn scenes performed by their digital doubles. So you're watching Pirates of the Caribbean, and things are getting hot between Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, and rather than have the sex scene implied, you actually see it. They didn't perform it. It was either entirely CG, or you had perhaps body doubles come in, and then the faces were digitally replaced with CG characters. Having worked in the business, I'll tell you, they might shoot it that way, but odds are they probably end up eventually replacing it all with pixels. It's just worked out over the last few years to be cheaper to go all digital than to try and monkey around with some sort of hybrid. Another idea that came to mind was that of Edit Prawn, which is remixed pornographic versions of mainstream non-porn films. Without even having Disney's consent, a company could right now move in and offer this. It would be a CD or a DVD of hardcore sex scenes from a movie like Harry Potter, all rendered CG, with some sort of edit decisionless program that when run, you'd insert your Harry Potter DVD that you bought, you'd insert your edit porn DVD, it would churn around in your computer for an hour and spit out a DVD with a hardcore cut of Harry Potter. It's technically completely possible. Now, legally, there's some huge obstacles to this, but again, things are happening. I mean, there's so much copyright infringing render porn already on the internet created or hosted in companies that don't really respond to legal action from the United States. Making this feasible. So, CG creatures. Anything that's not a human in the visual effects industry is referred to as a creature. So it's a poodle or a velociraptor, they're all creatures. Everything else is a CG actor or a character. So the Kraken in Pirates of the Caribbean, a CG creature. What does this have to do for porn? Well, digital hentai. Duh. If any of you are hentai enthusiasts, you probably know of La Blue Girl. It's a very famous Japanese hentai series that was animated. They, in the 90s, actually made a live-action version of it it wasn't very good. They use a lot of sort of foam rubber tentacles that, you know, hey, just flop it around, make it look like it's fucking you. Sort of, you know, Ed Wood type of effects. And generally not very good. And again, it's that issue of if we're going for photoreal, but it's not very convincing in how it moves and how it's lit and how it looks, it's the effect is usually less arousing than had you stayed more safely on the side of being stylized. That's starting to disappear now. Given the right artists, enough budget, enough time, you could make hentai porn that was completely photorealistic, completely convincing, and possibly quite arousing. Time remapping. This is a broad term for, this sort of stuff that you see in Behind the Green Door, where they do slow motion and the famous money shot from Behind the Green Door. I actually had to edit this down to about a quarter of what it is in the movie, and it's still 3 minutes, and I'm not going to show it all to you. It's really, really slow. The first two shots are about a minute and a half each of her just waiting for the semen to kind of splash down on her. I don't know. They must have thought, doing a lot of pot or something, they must have thought this was really... But again, it's a good sign of what people were doing. Like, hey, we have some technology. Let's make this kind of creative. Let's make it artistic. Let's do something unique with this. Well, of course, we can jump from there to...
In this particular rig...
The bullet time money shot.
120 cameras.
Actually, that's already been done, though not quite so vividly. If any of you are very closely watched Fight Club... There's a scene between a dreamt or half-remembered sex scene between Edward Norton's character, the narrator, and Helena Bonham Carter's character. And if you have Fight Club, the special edition, there's a making-of thing on that that shows how they did CG models and projection-mapped images of those two actors so that as he imagined and remembered the sex scene, the camera flew around them in this, again, impossible camera move, moving between their bodies and around them in this just absolutely unfilmable, very, very stylized way. So, the bullet time money shot, again, duh. And there's a picture of soap. One of the stranger areas that this leads us down into, if you've been following along and you realize, really, anything you can think of can be realized. Anything that you want, any story you want to write, any slash fiction that you find online could be realized photorealistically in a film, again, given the right artist, the right budget, the right amount of time. There ends up being some very gray moral and legal areas. A coworker of mine at ILM, right before coming to work at Industrial Light and Magic, had worked down in L.A. on the Adrian Lyne remake of Lolita from 1997. This film, they tried to kind of increase the sex from the original. A lot of it in the 1961 version was implied, well, certainly implied, very loosely, lightly implied. Where in this, they wanted to get a lot more, not graphic, but just make it more overt that there was a sexual relationship between the adult character Humbert and Lolita. They actually also wanted to be more true to the book and cast someone who was more 13, 14, rather than 18 or 17, which is what they did in the 61 version. So they cast this young actress who they obviously couldn't legally film nude. So when it came time to do the frontal nudity shot, of which there were at least two, which have since been excised, it's interesting. The movie was bought, it languished a few years, and it was bought for home video by Blockbuster, who then refused to release the European cinema version on DVD, edited it, and the only version you can get on DVD now is the Blockbuster-owned and edited version. Which kind of makes you wonder if that's possibly the reason that they bought it. It's not a great movie, but the point is they shot her, the actress, wearing a body stocking around her breasts and black tape for tracking markers where her nipples would have been. And my coworker actually had the job. Then they shot a 18-year-old legal body double who had breasts. And he had the job of doing digital breast replacement, cutting the legal breasts off and pasting them onto the illegal actress. Okay. So digital visual effects now allows for photoreal. And of course, the question everyone asks is, did you put it on your demo reel? No, I kind of left it off. Now allows for photoreal depictions of illegal sexual acts, but without the involvement or abuse of any actual human beings. How will society and the law respond? Which is worse, the act or the portrayal of the act? And there are definitely arguments to be made on both sides of this at length. It's not really where I want to talk about, but I did want to raise it just because it's a very unavoidable consequence of these sorts of technologies. So that leads us to the use of visual effects in porn right now. The most well-known film that's been using visual effects, using all the techniques that I talked about, well, some of them, is a movie called Pirates, described as a swash and unbuckle film. Here's the trailer.
Faithful crew of the Sea Stallion, I'm about to lead you on a perilous journey. We're going to hunt down and kill the most notorious and dangerous of all pirates, Captain Victor Stagnetti and his pirate ship, the Devil's Rose.
Well said, Captain.
Thank you, Commander. What are we doing?
Line up the crew in the bow.
Bloody pirates!
I can't hunt pirates. I can't even hunt tuna.
Kill them! Kill them all!
Is that the best you got, pirate wizard? Bones?
Turn the fucking boat around!
This is where we're going, Tabaris Island.
I know where the Indian lives.
Then tell me.
Oh, I'll tell you.
What are you going to do, Serena?
The pleasure was all ours.
Aye, aye, Captain.
You better satisfy me.
Well, I'll show you what we do if you're kind.
Fire at will!
Is a historical production for a lot of reasons. Of course, it's the production company that will tell you that extensively on their website. It came out in 2005. Budget was said to have exceeded $1 million, U.S. dollars. The porn industry, as you probably know, is very secretive about a lot of the details of its business. Who they sell to, how much they sell to, how much they spend on production, what profits they make. Hollywood, there's a million websites you can go to find the exact box office internationally that films made. Porn movies, not so much. The rumor for this one is about $1 million. Over 300 visual effects shots, which is comparable to maybe not a big VFX-laden blockbuster, but a lot of larger budget Hollywood films. Released in both X and R-rated versions. This is actually an industry first for the porn industry, for the DVD pornographic market. They released the R-rated version first, and then a little less than a year later, they got the MPAA to certify a R-rated cut of it that was still an hour and a half long. That was an hour and a half long, even with the hardcore sex cut out. So that should tell you it's a little bit of an unusual film. I mean, you think about most pornographic films, if you cut out all the hardcore sex, you'd have the credits, maybe. And that, by the way, you can find that in Blockbuster, of all places, with packaging design that looks very much like Pirates of the Caribbean. So it was clearly intended to piggyback both on that film and the overall pirate craze. And so that's another a large revenue stream that they had access to that a lot of other adult films are denied. One of the first adult HD DVD releases. Originally, they were going to release it on Blu-ray. Sony let it be known that they do not want to approve and allow pornographic films on Blu-ray. You probably heard about this. And so they went with HD DVD, just, again, like happened with the VHS Betamax issue 20 years ago. Three-disc, the pornographic X-rated version, it comes in three discs, the movie on DVD, special features on DVD, and then a third HD DVD. So you have no option. You're buying it with the HD DVD no matter what. And it costs, I think, $50. It's a little bit more than most adult films. In its release year, Pirates outsold all other adult films by a ratio of 2-1, and it's become the most awarded title in adult video news history. It has 13 awards, including the 2006 award for best-selling and most rented. So even 2 years, 3 years after its release, it's still consistently in the top renting, top-selling pornographic DVDs. So, why do we not see this stuff in a broader number of pornographic films? The answer is it's the money. Let's look at typical film budgets, and I know there's a couple charts. I'll go quick through the charts. Okay, we have indie films. I don't know. What's a standard indie film? Between $1 million and maybe $30 million. Indie is a very loose category these days. But, you know, any movie that came out in the same year as Pirates, Capote, thinking a budget of $14 million? We'll see here. Low-budget blockbuster, $60 million for a low-budget blockbuster, like 300. That was its budget. A Hollywood blockbuster, a full-on visual effects summer VFX extravaganza like Pirates of the Caribbean or the Transformers, $150 to $200 million. And Pirates at $1 million? Boop. Let's zoom in on that for a second. We again have $150 million. $1 million. And just to compare, most online pornographic films, sort of things that Kink.com might turn out, or actually Kink.com does just more episodic stuff, but pornographic DVDs, typical pornographic DVDs for the video market, are budgets about $100,000 or less. So that would be this. And then RenderPrawn costs nothing. So again, let's look at Capote, 2005. $7 million budget. Had a running time of 114 minutes. Cost per minute of screen time, $61,000. $61,000 per minute. Okay. Total box office, $49 million. It was a very popular, well-received movie. Earned about seven times its cost. Let's look at 300, 2007, $60 million. Running time, 116 minutes. Cost per minute, $500,000, basically. $517,241 per minute. Total box office, $456 million for a ratio of about 7.6 times its cost. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Actually, the budget's report is 150. I just call it 151 because it ran 151 minutes. And if we say that they're the same, it has a budget of $1 million per minute. Wow. That's why it looks so good. But it made $1 billion for a ratio of 7.1 times its cost. Now, I didn't actually cherry-pick those three movies. Those are just sort of randomly picked movies from around the same time period. I tried to find an indie, a big one, and a medium VFX movie, and they all came out to be about 7.1. Pirates, $1 million budget, if we believe the company. 129-minute running time, $7,000 per minute. And total sales between 15 and 20 million for a 15 to 20 times its cost profit. Now, that may sound like a lot better deal than the rest of those movies, but if we had some, I don't know if anyone's here in the pornography industry, I don't know how much you make off of your films. I'm expecting it's probably more than that. If you turn out, you know, 6 to 8 movies a week, you're probably getting more revenue over time than that. But, no. We'll see. It's a lucrative, though, compared to the seven times earnings we were seeing on the other films. So where does that leave us? Well, why would you use these? Okay, we can see maybe it's profitable. And I don't know what the profit margins are for the rest of the pornographic film industry. But it is profitable, and it's profitable at ratios that are comparable, actually decisively better than a lot of mainstream Hollywood productions. And the reason any of this stuff gets made is for the money. There are broadening markets for pornography. Through the internet, culturally, it's easier to buy porn than it's ever been before. You don't have to go somewhere. You can get it online. There's less cultural stigma attached to it now. And so there's going to be an ever-growing market for more and different types of porn. Increased expectation of quality. I think the market for low-end porn is almost saturated. The director, June, of Pirates, said one of the reasons they made that film at that budget was to stand out in a sea of free and cheap competition on the internet. That to have a competitive porn DVD release, you had to offer something more than what was being sold through all the other channels of distribution. And an infinity of fetishes, I had to work this in somewhere, the long tail of pornography. We should jump back to the hentai slide. but if you're familiar with the long tail theory, basically this means that internet-based technology, internet-based businesses, certainly they're not alone in this, but because of the way their distribution works, they have a greater ability to sell smaller number of things to a wider number of people, making markets viable that weren't viable necessarily before. You can sell to 1,000 different fetishes, 1,000 different movies, and sell them once or twice instead of selling one movie to everybody like pirates around the earth and selling it for $1 billion. So there are a lot of factors that I think over time are going to lead to an increasing demand for different types of pornography, higher quality pornography, and pornography that involves at least some of the things that I've shown you. What's going to bring the cost down? You know, it's still $1 million per minute we can't do if you're making a pornographic film. Cheaper, more powerful computers, Moore's curve is still in effect for the foreseeable near future, hopefully. Increasingly capable VFX software at decreasing prices. The software just keeps getting more powerful. Greater demand for visual effects in all areas. This is something I've been teaching at the Academy of Art for the past several years, and I've seen it. My students now, there are more jobs for visual effects artists than there have ever been. There's just a greater demand across the board. Commercial producers, lower budget people, they go and see a movie like Pirates of the Caribbean and they come back all pumped to make their little, you know, used car lot commercial have tentacles and bullet time. And then they come to you and ask you, could you do it for $1,500? But it's still, there is definitely a trickle-down effect of seeing these things in the culture. And there are more trained visual effects artists as a result of this. And consequently, there are more of them looking for work. While there is a greater amount of work in visual effects, the high-end work is severely limited. Very few of my students end up going to work for Weta or Sony or ILM. Most of them end up working in television. A lot of them choose to move back where they came from and, you know, be a big fish in Boise rather than be a PA for 8 years in L.A. So there's an increasing number of people who come out of school, come out of degree programs in visual effects and know how to do this, ready to hit the ground running. Falling wages for visual effects artists. Unfortunately, as a consequence of that last one, entry-level wages are now down around $15 an hour and dropping. What used to be like $30 to $50 an hour is just fallen severely. And these people are kept less long. ILM would bring you on usually for a year, year and a half contract. Employees at the orphanage are brought on sometimes for a month, and after the end of that month, their contract is extended maybe by a week. And then maybe by another week if there's still work. So there are a lot of people who are floating from job to job, very competitively looking for work, and the pay is not that high. This is exacerbated by outsourcing and offshoring. A lot of jobs are being moved to Korea, Asia, India, Roto. A lot of this sort of more repetitive stuff is being offshored pretty rapidly. Initial experiments in those areas have mostly been a failure as far as the industry is concerned, but that can't last. If you have brain surgeons in Mumbai, you can have compositors and CG animators in Mumbai that do just as good work. It's just a question of infrastructure, time, training. That's going to change. And the cost of labor there is fractional compared to what they pay artists here. You probably heard George Lucas has moved his whole production, well, not his whole production, but is steadily growing his facility in Singapore and steadily gutting his facility here in the city. Now, he said he's had his spokesman say that the reason they moved to Singapore is because of their strong stance on intellectual property. Okay, and that she has family business partners there. But it's just cheaper, and that's where the business goes. So, who's going to do this work? Well, there's a lot of changing attitudes towards pornography, coupled with less consistent work in the visual effects industry, and thirdly, a factor that's close and dear to my heart and probably yours, more kinky geeks. So what this means is we're going to have more visual effects artists willing, in fact, even eager to work on pornographic films. If you're going to be one of the, if you go to ILM, you have to kill people to advance in that company because it's so entrenched and there's so much seniority. And there's a real A-list group of players there. But if you want to go and start your own visual effects company in pornography, you get to be visual effects supervisor on day one. It's not top-heavy. It's not, it's a good place for a starting out artist to maybe make a big name for themselves really quickly. So this brings us to inevitability. Not if, but how. And I had to use this feature. Ooh, inevitability. Dude, the program had it. And it's visual effects. I mean, that's a part. Again, you talk about the trickle down effect of visual effects. That's a particle effect. That's a particle simulation, a very simple, basic particle simulation that they would use to simulate fire or water or rain or explosion debris in a high-end visual effects shot. And here it is in, you know, a free bundled presentation software. So there we go. This is that's it. I think this is inevitable. That's my point. Hopefully I've given you a bit of an insight into some of these technologies if you weren't already a visual effects geek who kind of follows this stuff obsessively and buys all the special editions, and maybe started you thinking about some of the ways that this stuff could and probably will be applied to visual effects. So, there you go.
Maestro, and there's a hand up here. I guess that's a question, or... Yes? I tell you what.
There you go. Is it question time? Oh, you said that, and I'm not an authority on the gay porn community, but you said that gay porn without condoms sold more? That's the impression I got.
What I've heard is the condom, the safe sex porn, especially in the gay market, has sold less, is what I've been told. So,
I have limited experience with that, but it was that. I mean, it was like even when I was at VCA and we were compiling old gay stuff, the community really spoke out and was like, you know, because they traditionally they don't test because they don't want their test. When you test in the industry, it makes you make your results public. Record, basically. That's how everyone protects themselves. In the gay community, they don't want people, you know, I mean, they have a reason for that. So they just all use condoms. So I thought that was interesting, so I thought you should know that. And the other thing is, what Pirates does in the adult industry is actually different. I think it's, the reason it wins so many awards and all that is, it's really good PR for us, you know what I mean? I don't think it's our best work. but
it's not a very well-reviewed film.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like most of the friends, I had to borrow a copy to watch. And most of the people who volunteered to lend me their copy said, don't expect to actually get turned on. We watch it for shits and giggles, you know, mostly to make fun of it. So it's one of those films. Then again, there is definitely, I mean, there is a market for people who like the glossy LA kind of boob job, you know, non-ironic porn. Yeah. I think, you know, it's San Francisco, so I think we're all like alt porn by definition, but there it does sell. But I think you're absolutely right. It's a more of a showcase piece than it is necessarily reflective of any stronger market for that type of product.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the numbers.
Oh, numbers completely off. Okay. Yes.
It's interesting. Thomas Ballhausen had his talk about adult remakes of major films, and he was talking about Pirates today. And the interesting comment was that most of the adult remakes of mainstream movies, like stay in the genre, for example, that Pirates is a comedy. It's still a comedy, yes, in the adult version, and that the porn wars thing with Star Wars that incredibly takes itself serious, like Star Wars takes itself serious. But I don't have to tell you about that, like concerning ILM. Okay, good. Like, more questions?
I know a lot about porn budgets. Being that the budgets aren't so high, like, they're usually around, like, $20,000. Like, $20,000 to, like, maybe $50,000. They're not that high. How do you actually see... foresee graphics being placed into these films, because a lot of films do not make as much as Pirates did. Again, as Ian said, it was very highly publicized. It even has a rated R version for like commercial places like Blockbuster to purchase it at a better cost. And the fact that they sell it with the HD DVD and you have no choice. How do you foresee that actually affecting the market, considering a lot of the pornography budgets are a lot lower, and especially since the market is so flooded with internet pornography, because you don't have to go out to the store, so why would you buy a DVD and wait for it when you can just click a button and get it on the web? How do you foresee that actually taking place?
Very good questions. You know, and the genius of my that opening quote about, you know, anything that, you know, can be done with technology eventually will, or, you know, the question is, I can kind of skip all that. It's not, like, I can just say, no, I posit a future where it all happens. Because it historically, that seems to be, I mean, I will address your question. I'm not going to cut cheap out with that completely. But it does seem that over a long enough time, these things eventually do just trickle down. It may seem a little bit hard to bridge the gap between a $20,000 porn production today and $1 million, you know, or even a $150 million movie. And yes, if you want to know how those technologies would be applied in a $20,000 movie, they wouldn't be, you know, unless you found some, you know, industrial Mumbai and Nan was willing to come in and, you know, do it on spec just to get their name and start a relationship. You might be able to get a handful of shots, but nothing really significant. But somehow, you know, there are already chinks in the armor of companies like Industrial Light and Magic and Sony and these big behemoths defining the rates for this sort of work. The bottom really is dropping out of the market. In fact, it's a problem that a lot of the artists are grappling with right now, is that sort of loss of work and the lowering of their wages. Layoffs at ILM have been just, I mean, the place is gutted. Ways that's going to happen, I don't know. It's going to have to, producers of pornography, some of them, more of them are going to have to want to invest more money in it. And there's going to have to be some more success stories, not just Pirates. Pirates is the one movie that everyone brought up to me and said, oh, you've got to see this then. If you're doing something on visual effects and porn, watch this. And it is. It's obviously an anomaly relative to everything else. So I don't think it was released in 2005. They're working on a sequel, Pirates 2. But I don't think it's a harbinger of any big flood of VFX-laden porn. And in fact, as far as Pirates go, I should point out that it's actually very unimaginative in its use of visual effects. None of the more, to me, provocative uses of visual effects, like, you know, CG hentai or bestiality or robots or fantasy locations or, you know, swapping genders, his face on her body, I mean, anything you can think of. And all it does is basically have some ships shooting their cans at each other and some skeletons that they ripped off from the, you know, Ray Harryhausen bargain basement bin. I mean, it's really unimaginative in what it does with these tools. So there's a great potential for this stuff. And it's going to take some other producers wanting to risk the money on it. And yes, will they, if it's a sure thing that they can spend $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 and make a website that people just like give their credit cards to over and over and over again with one hand? You must get really good at that. Not right now, but eventually that market's going to start to saturate. It has to. And they're going to start to notice, hey, this person over here is doing something differently from the rest of what we're selling. And it did some business. And since all we really care about at the end of the day is the money, well, shit, let's put some of our money over there and see what happens. And then, oh, hey, maybe that one does well. Maybe we'll do another one and another one. I mean, even visual effects in Hollywood is cyclical. All it takes is for a couple, just watch. If you've been in the industry at all, we've seen this happen over and over and again in the last 20 years. What'll happen is there'll be a bunch of big visual effects movies, and then they'll start to, like, one was really good for reasons like The Matrix, reasons of story and plot and character and not simply visual effects, but the people in Hollywood see it as being, it was a visual effects movie, so we need to make visual effects movies. Big budget visual effects movies, that's the future of Hollywood. And then the next 2 or 3 years, all you see are copies of that film, each one progressively less good and less original, and audiences start to diminish for them. And all of a sudden, out of the blue comes a little romantic comedy or an indie film or something. And that does great business because all the sci-fi big budget films have gotten shitty. And so then Hollywood's, oh, we'll make a bunch of indie romantic films. Let's put all our money over there. And so, and then that does the same cycle, and eventually right now we're at the peak of a big, successful visual effects boom, which is going to, you know, abate a bit. Every time that tide comes in and out, though, the overall level of visual effects increases and the overall usage increases. And gradually, I think that effect is going to carry with it, and it's going to replicate itself in the porn market, and gradually you're going to start to see these things used a little bit here and there and then more and more. And all it takes is one or two filmmakers to use them in some really inventive way and to get some producer who's willing to back it with a couple $1 million, which in movies is not much. Maybe a lot in the porn industry, but in Hollywood, that's nothing. And get it with the promise of saying, hey, we'll make an R version. We'll make the story good enough that we can have an R version. So we've got you covered. Even if the porn version doesn't sell at all, we'll sell this version straight to video, and we'll do pretty good on it. So, and it'll just gradually happen. Not today, I don't think.
I guess we are out of time, and it was a fabulous speech. Thanks a lot.